This episode of Storyworthy is sponsored by Story02 Software from Jungle. You guys, Story02 is fantastic. It's a way to outline and define your story. So whether you're writing fiction or nonfiction, an essay, a novel, a screenplay, or even a one-person show, Story02 Software will help you get your story out there with a beginning and a middle and an end. Now, there are customizable story paradigms, character image packs, and the ability to import and export final draft. You heard me. So head on over to junglesoftware.com and check out Story02 and enter the coupon code STORYWORTHY, that's all one word, to receive 10% off. Story02 by Jungle Software. There is nothing out there like it to tell your story.
Hey, this is Kevin Allison of the Risk Podcast, and I'm getting risky on Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney. We're coming to you from St. Xavier High School in beautiful Cincinnati, Ohio.
Wait a minute. Why are we in Ohio?
Because that is where our guest, Kevin Allison, went to high school.
Kevin Allison, Hannes. Kevin Allison is here, and I'm so excited. You know, his show, Risk, it's a storytelling show out of New York. Mm-hmm. It is so popular, and the stories that people tell, they are, what are they, Hannes?
They're risky.
They are risky. And I absolutely love this podcast. It's fantastic. But when I think of the word risk, it reminds me of that board game, Risk.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was a kid, we used to play a lot of games that were like, they sounded like Trouble. I mean, there was a game named Trouble.
Trouble, yeah. I was never a big Risk fan. I liked Stratego.
Yeah. Stratego.
I love Stratego.
I still have that. You know, I got that in my closet. And you know what me and Alabama have been playing is Clue. We can't stop playing Clue.
You gotta love the Clue.
Me and my daughter.
Yeah, it's nice with the murdering. That's a lot of fun.
I know. She says to me, she goes, Mama, what do they do with a wrench? And I go, they just nail you over the head, honey. What do you do with the rope? Well, that's like a, you know. And she says, and what's a revolver? Or, it's a revolver. That's a gun. And then she never doesn't understand a lead pipe. I said, that's the same thing. You hit him over the head with the lead pipe.
It's, and then she went.
It's very
she said,
strange.
That's redundant.
Okay, you
Anyhow,
guys.
Back to the.
So Kevin Allison brings the topic forth.
Yes.
A little help from my friends.
And
the only thing I wanted to say about this is, as you know, me leaving Pittsburgh, you leaving Milwaukee, you know, you go off into to Los Angeles or wherever you leave, and your friends do become your family. Am
right. You create a whole family, which is the people who don't leave don't get it. It's like, why would you, why, you have a family. Why would you leave? It's like, have you met my family? No.
Yeah.
I want to be able to pick and choose who's in there.
Yeah.
And that's the way it works out. And especially L.A. is like that. And, you know, you get people and they're like, you have a lot of orphan Thanksgivings, especially when
and
you're
younger.
And
they're the most fun. And by far, that's the most fun you're ever going to have on Thanksgiving is with your a group of friends, even if you're having a bad meal.
Yeah, exactly.
That's going to be more fun than anything in your family. I have
almost as much fun as watching the beloved Green Bay Packers play every Thanksgiving.
Oh, I don't know about that. But I am close with a couple of my siblings, and then I'm not so close with a couple of siblings. And they don't know me. Like, they're not. We're not. It's like we're not even related. It's so strange how somebody in your own family has nothing to do with
you. Idea that we're just because we're physically related to people, we're supposed to know them or understand them. I think that's just a very modern idea. I don't think in the hundreds of years ago, 1,000 years ago, people were like, I mean, even a couple of hundred years ago, 150 years, you were born in Massachusetts and you decided to go to California. You left on a wagon train. You would never see any of those people again in your life.
Jesus,
you would never go back to Massachusetts, and they would never go 5,000 miles on a horse.
And there were no phones, and there was no email, and
there's
you weren't texting.
It's like there's the Pony Express. That's it. You're never going to see your family
and
again.
And so if you hear about your brother passing, perhaps it was 7 months ago.
Yeah, by the time you hear about it, it happened a long time ago.
Oh, man. That's depressing, Hannes.
Is it?
Well, okay,
is it
now, there
really?
We go. You're right. You're right. You go back to is it or is it not? Right. I hear
right.
what you're saying.
Is it? I mean, it's like
yeah. I have one sibling. I don't ever intend on talking to again, and I don't mind that at all. In fact, I find
you're not
it,
losing any sleep. She's not
no,
losing
I
any sleep.
No, I find it more rewarding every day. Actually, do you know what I mean?
I'll have to find out afterwards which one this is.
Oh, that's not hard to figure out. The point is that my friend...
It's funny how she thinks I've been paying attention to her for the past 20 years. And like
Anas
taking
is
notes
the second person I met in Los Angeles. Second person in line at the Ice House.
Yes,
we met.
First person to stop listening. And the second person you
And we've been great friends ever since. But yeah, I mean, you're more like my family. Alabama calls you Uncle Hannes.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like her uncle. She doesn't delineate, you know, blood between her uncle
exactly,
and her aunts.
Exactly, because she has aunts that she never sees.
That she's never, right, that exactly.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, yeah, it's just the whole, I'm sorry, but the whole, I know my family history is jaded, but the idea that blood is thicker than water seems to be a completely insane idea to me.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, you're related. Who gives a fuck? You know what? Jesus. Tom Hanks and Dick Cheney are both related to Abraham Lincoln, technically. So what? What does that have to do? Why are they? Are they?
I don't know. I don't know.
That has nothing to do with anything.
I definitely don't know. But anyway,
this is podcast gold.
I love having my friends.
Ancestry.com talk podcast gold.
Hey, listen, you guys, Kevin Allison is here right now. And before he comes on the show, I did want to mention that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast, that would be great.
Why don't you think of us as your family?
Tell them.
And since we're family, give us some money.
StoryworthyPodcast.com.
Yeah, go to StoryworthyPodcast.com. You click on the Patreon ad. You can help us out with a monthly gift, $5, $4, $3, $2, whatever you can help us with. Just throw us a couple of bucks because we're not going to make any money. If you give us $3 a month, we're not spending it on heroin. Okay?
Well, speak for yourself.
No. That's at least $4 a month because heroin is expensive.
Follow us over on the Twitter at StoryWorthy.
Check out our MySpace.
And on Friendster. We're going to bring that back
Friendster,
as well.
Right.
Now listen, you can email us. That's what
also, you can
say.
Telegraph us.
Info@StoryWorthyPodcast.com. Info@StoryWorthyPodcast.com. All right, you guys, stick around because Kevin Allison is on his way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have musician Lynn Drury.
And I'm going to be telling y'all about goat tying.
That's next time on Storyworthy. Woo-hoo!
Hey, everybody, it's Paul Mercurio, and I'm looking at a lovely woman across from me, Christine Blackburn. And you're listening to Storyworthy.
And we're back. We have left St. Xavier High School, and we're now at the headquarters of Procter & Gamble, one of Cincinnati's major soap manufacturers.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, P&G, as they call it.
I wonder if Kevin ever has to go on a field trip there, you know?
Like that's an interesting question.
We always went on field trips to the Heinz factory, and at the end, we would have a hot dog with ketchup, and then we would get a pickle pin.
As always, I am going to beat you. When I was in high school, grade school in Milwaukee, we would go on a long trip to Lake Cheese Factory. And we would come out of the Lake to Lake Cheese Factory with a bag of cheese curds.
Oh, God. That must have been the smelliest bus ever.
Cheese curds. Yeah, I know. Imagine.
It's so foul.
Cheese curds. People out here don't even know. It's not the cheese. When you make the cheese, stuff floats to the top.
That's the part.
You skim off the scum. And you solidify it, and that's a cheese curd
right there.
It's
so poutine-ish.
That's one of the ingredients of poutine is. French fries covered in gravy, brown gravy, and cheese curds.
I just don't
God
know.
Bless Canada.
All right, you guys, Kevin Allison's here right now. He's an actor and a writer.
No, he left.
He's also the host and creator of the Risk Podcast. He's also the founder of thestoryostudio.org, and you may remember him as the redheaded gay guy from The State on MTV. Those aren't my words. That was in his bio.
Hang on, the redheaded one? Because there were so many gay guys on that show.
You can find him at risk-show.com and on Twitter at the Kevin Allison. Folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for Kevin Allison.
Thank you so much. I have to start by saying that I'm switching from the story that I had in mind about a little help from my friends to a riskier story because... Well, you guys were talking about how risk is so risky, and then I thought, oh no, I can't disappoint everyone by telling an NPR-ish story here. So, yes, I did grow up in Cincinnati, Ohio, and you know, psychologists will sometimes say that If you can nail down, if you can zero in on your first memory, it's probably significant. It's probably like almost like thinking of a dream because it's stuck there rumbling around in your head, and it must have some emotional weight for you. And I remember very clearly what my first, I think, conscious thought is that I can recall. I'm about 3 years old, somewhere between 3 and 4, and I'm crawling around on the dining room rug looking at the little shag fibers in the rug and the dust motes coming through the light coming through the window, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, I really like boys' butts. And that has been pretty much every other thought that I've had since that afternoon. The thing of it is, you are absolutely right. Cincinnati is the most conservative city north of the Mason-Dixon line. And it has an obsession with sex. The Mapplethorpe trials were there. The Larry Flint trials were there. In Cincinnati, it's not like homosexuality doesn't exist. It's like sexuality doesn't exist. I'm not sure how the town reproduces, but anyway, I grew up super, super, super aware that I was gay. It was right in the forefront of my consciousness, but I couldn't express it or experiment with it until I left Cincinnati at the age of 18 and went to New York City. Now, I went to NYU to study film, and there was a gay bar in the East Village, about 10 blocks from NYU. It's called the Boiler Room, and it's where all the young guys from NYU would hang out. And when I first started hanging out at these kinds of bars, I was so intimidated because it had never occurred to me. I was so scared of games like Risk and Monopoly and soccer and baseball and football and all of that when I was a kid, because there was all that heterosexual male competition in those things. So when I first stepped into a gay bar, I'm like, oh no, there's all this male competition in the room that I just hadn't anticipated that cruising would be such a intimidating thing. So I became very much of a wallflower when I first started hanging out at gay bars. I just remember this one night, I'm having a beer with some friends at the Boiler Room, and I say to a friend, you know, I really want to get laid tonight, but I don't want to have to start a conversation. And he said, oh, well, you're in luck, because there's this place right across the street that the Rolling Stones used to own. It was this basement where they'd go to escape from the rest of the city so that no one would know where they were. But now it's a sex club. And you go over there, and what you'll find is this really dark, kind of creepy alley. And there's a door there that looks like it's to a condemned building. But if you really push on that door, it's got the number 82 spray painted on it. It'll creak open, and then you go down one flight of stairs and another flight of stairs and another flight of stairs, and there's a little guy. There's like a dwarf or a midget kind of guy down there, and if you give him $10, he'll let you in, and you walk in, and it's a sex club. It's all dudes having sex with dudes, and the best part is it's mostly guys from NYU because they're all coming from across the street from this bar. So you don't have to worry so much about, you know, running into too many guys who look like Santa Claus in assless chaps or the way I look today in 2014. So I said to my friend, well, what am I thinking? You know, compared to standing here drinking this beer, that sounds like a much more efficient way to go about this. So I go across the street, and it's exactly like he says. There's the creepy alleyway, the door with the number 82 spray painted on it. It creaks open. I go down one flight of stairs and another, and there's the little dude. And I give him my $10, and he lets me in, and I'm instantly enveloped in clouds of smoke. You could smoke in New York City in those days. And I realized right away, it was a maze. This place was designed with snaking hallways going left, right, all around. You could very easily get lost, but along every hallway were these little doors for these closet-sized rooms. And what guys would do is they'd stand in the doorway, kind of leaning up against it sexily, and if you walk past and you like him and he likes you, you nod at each other, then you go into his little room and you have a grand old time. Now, I had just studied in film school the week previously the film Seven Samurai by Akira Kurosawa. See, I was studying film at NYU, and our professor had said, I'm going to show you guys a movie today. It's one of the 10 greatest films ever made. There's so much to get out of this movie. So we watched it, and what I got out of the movie was that in the second half, Toshiro Mifune, the main samurai guy, is wearing almost nothing but what kind of looks like a diaper, and he looked great. So this just kind of lit up this new interest in my head, this vision of a samurai that I wanted to have some fun with. So here I am walking around and with all that social anxiety, you know, with all that competition of men and cruising and all that, I found that I just didn't feel sexy enough. I didn't feel like I had the prowess. So a guy who felt like me could spend a lot of time walking around and around that maze, getting a lot of exercise at 4 o'clock in the morning. But at a certain point, I walk past a little door and it's kind of shadowy. I'm like, is anyone in that room? I look a little bit closer and yeah, I look in and I see there's this fierce pair of Asian eyes in there. And he's kind of nodding at me, and I look closer, and then I notice he's got a ponytail sticking straight up like a samurai. I thought, oh, my God, if he doesn't, you know, drive a machete through me, then I just hit the jackpot. So I jump on in, but then my brain does a real quick split second thinking, oh, wait a minute, Kevin. You've never done this before. No one's given you any tips on safety. You don't know the typical protocol at a sex club. What is the safest way to start this conversation? So I found myself just blurting out to him, let's just go back to my place. So we walk up one flight of stairs and another flight of stairs and another flight of stairs, and now we're in the lamplight outside, and I can see, oh no. This is not a samurai. He's a little guy with a big beaky nose, and he's doing a lot of sniffling and shivering like he might be on something. And I thought to myself, geez, you know, I'm from Ohio. I don't know how to be impolite and like cut things. I mean, what am I going to say? Oh my gosh, I have an appointment with the nighttime dentist I forgot about. So instead, I just said, what's your name? And he said, Ham. And I said, Ham? He said, no, Ham. I said, Ham. He said, no, Ham. He was not a chipper guy. I thought, geez, Kev, the last thing you should do is actually take this guy home with you. So we get back to my place. And as we're walking in, I'm thinking, all right, what should I do now? Maybe turn on some Miles Davis, light some candles. But no, as soon as we walk in the door and it closes behind us, Ham goes into command mode. He says, stand over there. I said, excuse me? He said, stand over there. And I thought, oh my gosh, maybe this is this thing I've heard about that they call dominance and submission. Maybe I'm supposed to just yes and all this. And kind of go with the flow like an actor and see what happens. So I figured, well, I mean, that's easier than saying no because, you know, I'm from Ohio. So I stood over there. And then he's looking at me and he says, take off your clothes. And I said, Ham, do you think we can keep it down a little bit? He said, take off your clothes. So I took off all my clothes. And now I'm making excuses. I'm thinking, well, maybe today I'll kind of see the light. I'll have a sort of euphoric eureka moment and realize the joy of dominance and submission. So let's just, you know, go all out and see what happens. Now I'm naked and he's studying me still. And then he really lays it on me. He says, put the shoes on your balls. I said, pardon me? He said, tie the shoes to your balls. He's acting like, How'd this guy get this far in life without learning how to tie shoes to his balls? He had to show me what he meant. He wanted me to tie the laces together of my Converse sneakers so that, you know, the same way people would do if they were going to throw them over a telephone wire. And then he wanted me to take this contraption and wrap it kind of like a propeller around my balls so that the shoes would end up dangling at my shins. Well, at this point, I'm so curious as to where the fuck this could be going next that I did what he said. Now I'm feeling very, very pinched, you know, because Converse, I mean, I had these the most heavy arch supports in there that money could buy. Converse are not good for your feet. And now I'm learning they're also not all that great for your balls. So I'm standing there like a cowboy because I'm all bow-legged and I'm thinking, all right, Ham, let's get to the next part of the play here as quickly as possible. Then he takes down his pants. He's still standing at the door, like 12 feet away on the other side of the room. And he just starts masturbating like a madman. He's just having me stand there and he's just like whacking off. He's getting all red in the face and sweaty and just going crazy. And I thought, oh my gosh, well, this might be over pretty soon because he appears to be the world's fastest masturbator. But I had nothing to do. So after a while, you know, I mean, I think he was on something, and sometimes that means it might take a while. After a while, I just thought, well, why don't I initiate where this could go next? So I said, Ham, do you think we might want to move to the bedroom or something? And he got really angry, and he said, what's your problem? You look great. I thought, well, all right, I may be some sort of fashion statement for the future, but I don't know. I don't feel all that great. And he just goes on and on and on. And again, I think, well, maybe if I approach him, that'll work. So I start to approach him, and I'm like, hey, how's it going? And he's like, oh, but come on. You're screwing this all up. Wait, you've got some sort of problem. You don't think you look great? He kept coming back at me with these two arguments. I had a problem. I look great. And finally, I just started getting heated with him. We were arguing back and forth, and he just would not stop. So now I'm like, okay, it's time for a little dominance on your part, Kevin. I picked up his jacket, and I threw it out in the hallway. I was done. I was surprised at myself for being so bold. And then he was just deflated. I had totally ruined his big shoes on balls plans for the evening. He went out in the hallway and got his jacket, started getting dressed again. And he was kind of like a politician on election day, just trying to get that point across one last time. He said, I don't know what your problem is. You look great. And I said, Ham, thanks so much. It just wasn't working for me. So I let him out. But you know what? As I'm leaving him out, I turn around, and I had forgotten I had brought a full-size mirror from Ludlow Street. This was before the whole bed bug epidemic, where basically my entire apartment was furnished from Ludlow Street. And I turn around, and I see myself in this full-length mirror, and for the first time, I see what I look like. I'm completely nude, except for my shoes. And I think, wow, you know, Ham might have been psychotic, but he had one thing right. I look great.
Oh, so many notes.
That's an amazing story. Wait, I thought the idea of the sex club was to do it in the sex club.
That's totally the idea.
Yeah,
I just got freaked out. I was like, I think I'd feel more comfortable if...
But you're not supposed to be in conversation, right?
You're absolutely right about that as well. You're not supposed to have much conversation.
I just thought of one of my favorite lines ever from 30 Rock. I'm assuming it's the show that you... 30 Rock, you like that show?
I've seen
it. Okay. Alec Baldwin once says to Tina Fey, he says, never go with a hippie to a second location. It's like, never pick up a guy in a sex club and go to a second location. You're defeating the whole thing. You're like, you're being so Ohio, you want to communicate. And by the way, there is no reason that the name of that story could not be A Little Help for My Friend. You didn't need to tell us that you were switching stories. It completely fits in.
There you go.
Were you 18?
Well, no. At this point... I was probably closer to 20, so I had a little bit of experience at this point. I have an earlier sex story from when I was 18, when I first arrived in New York and went into Central Park in the middle of the night. That was another.
How Angels in America.
Yes, very, very. Yes.
Okay, no, so what, I need to hear this.
They're almost all, most of my early stories are comedies of error, you know, like the first time I tried prostitution, a disaster.
Yeah, it's just so risky.
Well, can I wait? Let me just say this about the first of all, the sex club, which I've decided needs to be called the Sex Maze.
Which, by the way,
is a great name for a restaurant.
The Labyrinth.
This, Christine, this is what you get when you take women out of the sex equation.
Mm.
And the idea of romance and wooing.
And lighting and like Chardonnay.
What women,
and music.
Yeah, what if women were willing to just meet in a sex maze? And have sex with strangers, that's how men would have sex with them.
Well,
all the stuff, yeah, all the stuff where we pick you up and we figure and we pretend to want to go see the fucking romantic comedy with Matthew McConaughey.
That's another kind of role play.
Leave that shit all out. It's like men are disgusting. It's not because they're having sex with men. It's like men just want to fuck.
Yeah.
Not always and not forever. Men mature.
Like the black hallways. Like I feel like intimidated by like. I guess that doesn't matter, right? The hallways are dark. You can't see. Like, in my opinion, it's like, where
took away the whole anonymity thing was the whole thing.
Yeah, like, I've done
took that away.
And, you know, I do that because I've become much kinkier since I started Risk. I can tell a story about why that happened. But I have a friend who organizes orgies, gay orgies and bisexual orgies. And he says that...
If he doesn't organize straight orgies? Oh, he's a bigot. I see that.
Well, you know, I mean,
ones
with just men and men and women.
Yeah, okay.
And he says, the difference is, for every woman you invite to an orgy, you have to add 20 minutes of conversation up front. But I've attended some of those, and I was like, this is a revelation to stand in a room with a bunch of people who will have sex later, but right now
we just
are getting
talk
to know
about
each other.
Traffic and the food and luck.
Christine, remember years ago we saw our whole group of friends saw a
we sat and watched a documentary
about sex club. What's
in
called
Orange County?
Mm-hmm. Singles.
Called Singles.
And it was like and it's a bunch of middle aged people and. First of all, all they talk about
they
is the traffic.
Naked, they were nudists. They were nudists.
But then they get together, then they have sex, which is wacky. And then they're talking afterwards. It's like, I just banged your wife, and your wife just did this, and somebody had a finger in here. And now we're like, you know, my kid's going to Santa Monica City College this week. Oh, yeah. You know what? Did you have the 405 coming down here was a nightmare. It's like you were just fisting someone. And now you're having a traffic conversation. So,
absolutely.
Because I've never been to a sex club. Uh-huh. My friend Susanna Brisk, she goes to sex clubs, and I've talked to her about it. I feel, and it's not just because I'm from Pittsburgh, but maybe that is part of it. Like, how did you break open the door, as it were? You know, going to New York, I mean, it's not just about, you know, being gay. It's about, like, the casual sex and, like, how do you go to the next level?
It's interesting. I think that what happened is so many of the guys that, because I was very into musical theater in high school, so many of the guys...
That is shocking news!
So many of the guys that I knew in high school and college who were just becoming conscious, their psyches were just allowing them... Okay, this is what I am. I can start to say it. I can start to try to date. That's a very natural progression there. Mm-hmm. But for me, I had spent my entire childhood feeling like I'm an alien on Earth. Mm-hmm. No one is like me. And so I just became very acclimated when I first moved to New York of being like a lone wolf out there of, I'm here. I don't maybe need to meet gay friends at first. I'll just go sailing off into Central Park at the age of 18 at 4 o'clock in the morning.
That's right. Christine wants to hear this story. All right, tell us the Central Park story.
In terms of it's not like the deviance. I'm thinking about the risky behavior in crime is what I always go to thinking about, like, aren't you scared for your life? You don't want, you know, that somebody's going to drug you. Somebody's going to take pictures of you. Somebody's going to have a hypodermic needle. I mean, you're putting yourself in a position of
absolutely
risky behavior.
The thing of it is that now I teach classes on kinky stuff. And
what's the name of the class?
Well, I teach one class called Everything You Can Do to an Ass Other Than Fuck It.
I told her the glass dildos are really in. Is
they
that
are
true?
Great. They're fantastic. And steel, stainless steel ones are also amazing.
I think stainless steel.
I think the stainless part
cleaner.
Is the part that really needs to be emphasized here.
I mean, I don't know. Glass. It just seems like sharp. You know, potentially sharp objects near my vajayjay.
Yeah,
no
well,
good,
you
no
don't.
Good.
You cannot let
can
one of those things get cracked.
Really, vajayjay? That's where you're, after all this, you're going vajayjay. You can't say vagina. You went, the line is so far in the distance, it's over the horizon. And you're like, I don't want to be naughty.
No. Okay, so go ahead. And then the other class you teach is called?
Oh, I teach one called Secrets of a Sweet Dom, because I was married for about 9 years to a man, and we had an open relationship, but we didn't act on it all that much. So when I was 41, all of a sudden I was single again. And I was really depressed because I thought, oh, how am I going to go back into dating? Then I found out, oh, my gosh, there's this trend where younger gay guys like older, schleppy, kind of fat, bearded guys, and they call us daddies. So I'm like, I'm in.
Wow.
I'm finally in.
So you just, yeah, turn that side. Yeah, yeah, right.
So I start. And then
great, another untapped market for me. Yeah. Okay. So the guys are going crazy.
Yes, but once I got into the kink community, I realized that a lot of them, a lot of younger guys, want it within the context of this, like you're going to be the guy in 50 Shades.
Sure.
You're going to be like really rough and kind of sadistic and a masterful, mysterious, yada yada. Well, that's not me.
Right,
you know,
right.
I cannot help but be nice.
Right. And you're more playful, I would think.
Yes, for sure. For sure. I love to laugh when playing with people. Yeah. So I've had to kind of establish, okay, if you're looking for someone who's going to be emotionally, you know, insulting and all that kind of, it's not going to happen with me. I can be rough, like physically rough, but I'll always be like, oh, are you okay?
What's your safe word?
I see you giggling a lot. Like,
what's your safe word?
Oh, red and yellow. Yellow for slow down a bit and red for just completely stop. I mean,
that seems so basic. I'm surprised.
Do you ever just yell out, green light, green light, more.
There are times when it's just so obvious
that no means no.
That,
oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt about that. Especially if it's stainless steel and about a foot long. Jesus Christ. What do your parents think? What do your neighbors think? Your school friends, Facebook people? Tell me.
Well, that's an interesting question. I think that a lot of the reason, see, risk is about coming out about anything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, from one story to next on the podcast, one will be about, oh, my mother died and I've really struggled with it. Another will be, I'm an atheist, but I had this crazy religious experience. So it's all over the map. But the idea is that everyone's kind of coming out about things. And I think that I created risk as a reaction against my mother.
Wow.
I mean, it's very fortunate that my parents are too old to know how to work the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They
That's
know.
What you feel about Christine's mom.
Yeah,
it's
my mom.
Yeah.
It's good she doesn't. She thinks the show's called Story World.
It doesn't matter.
And she can't find
it. It's all good.
Yeah.
The fact that stories have something to do with it is nice to them because they're like, oh, Kevin's helping people tell stories. And I've told them all the best stuff. I've told them about there was a man who wrote in, oh my gosh, my son is finally off heroin because he listened to the Under the Influence episode.
Wow,
or
that's nice.
Someone wrote to me just the other day and she said, my son, I think it was, came out to me and I realized that having listened to your show made me emotionally be able to deal with that.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have your parents listen to the slave episode.
No, God, no.
Now, see, that's the episode that stands out for me in Risk. The one, the woman who...
Melina Williams.
Man, that's a hell of a story.
Oh, my gosh.
She is an African-American girl,
mm-hmm.
and she hooked up with a dominatrix guy. How do you say it? A dom. And then he took it far.
Yeah, she became...
Treating her like a slave.
Yeah, she became interested in what's called race play. But BDSM is like all kinds of different genres of kinds of play. So she became interested in that, which is... still considered kind of a taboo kind of play, with even within the kink community. That just means that most people are a little squicked out by it, or are gonna like, yeah.
Well, people
okay.
can get hurt too. I mean, physically,
people can get all kinky play is risky to some extent. So it's very important. Like when someone will tell a story on Risk about, oh, someone choked me or whatever, I will tell the audience right after, don't try that stuff unless you've done a workshop on it. You know, like learn. Don't just jump in.
There are ball gag workshops.
Oh my gosh, yeah, there are all kinds of workshops.
I knew that because, like, at the Pleasure Chest,
for sure.
They do different workshops and stuff about stuff.
Yeah.
What about auto asphyxiation? That's a very dangerous thing.
Yeah, that's when you're doing it to yourself. Yeah, that's extremely dangerous.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think that.
So when you teach the classes, did you say that you teach people about safety in terms of going into Central Park in the middle of the night?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Like, I would say that most of my funny stories about sex, well, even some of my not so funny stories, are actually me making mistakes in terms
of... Well, that's
of,
all
like,
funny stories. Funny stories are never the day that went well for you.
Yeah,
are the greatest exactly sex you ever right. had with a person you ended up in a 10-year relationship with. Nobody's interested in that stuff.
Right. I guess what it is that everyone should realize that all sex comes with a certain amount of risk, and you just have to be super aware of it and know, okay, I choose this amount of risk, but not that much, you know?
Do you have to keep amping it up, the game, as it were?
You know, that's a great question, because there are some things, there are some fetishes or kinks that I've been introduced to over time where I thought, I'm never, ever going to like that or want to do that. And then it'll happen, and I'll be like, oh my gosh, I really like being whipped. And it can be a little bit of
always with another man. Have you been with a woman?
There's a story called Kevin Goes to Kink Camp, where
his new sitcom on ABC. Kevin goes
come
to kink
and
camp.
Knock on our door. We've been waiting for you
at the club camp.
Kink Company too.
There's a woman. Her name. She calls herself Strap on Joe.
She's the wacky neighbor.
Yeah. And she introduced me to my first experience with a lady.
Andy, Aunt B's got a strap on ready.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh no! It's just that she was super fun, super. She's kind of. She had a lot of guy energy.
Yeah,
you know?
Testosterone.
Yeah.
So she turned you on.
And we had complete and total fun. And it was, she took me to this part of the camp where it was like this little dark, kind of grungy room that was, and so I felt like, oh, this is like a gay
and you
sex
turn around
camp.
The corner and there was Ham. What's the matter with you? You look fantastic. I don't know why I'm giving this such
different?
An accent.
I want to know, is the orgasm different?
You know, what was interesting about that was.
Wait, are you saying you had sexual relations with this woman?
Yeah.
Not you
well,
with
yeah,
her.
I mean.
No. I was thinking more like, she did stuff to him.
She did. She
well, she had
she,
the strap
she,
on, didn't she?
I know, but it's
she
so,
stooped me.
Right, exactly. But I'm right. But you did not enter her vagina.
No.
Oh no, that is gross.
No, that's what I was asking.
Oh no. I don't think I could. I don't think I could pull that off.
But it's just interesting in terms of being, you know, kinky or being, you know, being in a place like that, you would think, well, you could do anything.
Well, you know, I think what we do is we get a little bit stuck in our ways. I think that if I hadn't grown up in a society that's, you know, has to see gay as gay and straight as straight, then I might, you know, feel a little differently about that.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. And they are aware of the podcast and have heard the podcast, and they do get a kick out of it. They definitely worry about me. They're like, oh my God, because they, you know, most of them are in Ohio still.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my gosh,
so
what's he going to do next?
The big bad city. You're very handsome, and I love your haircut.
Thank you.
Really, you have a great, very, very stylish haircut. No, you do. I'm just saying. I wrote it right here.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me a gay man has a stylish haircut? This is unbelievable. This is all information
that
I cannot possibly.
You were a member of the state, and I just, I can't get over all 11 members of the state went to NYU, the talent, and the fact that everybody has gone on to do really successful, wonderful things.
Yeah, and the fact that it was such a random way that we came together. It was almost like, you know, like the universe decreed it, because what happened was there was a comedy group on campus at that time, but you had to go through NYU to be in it. It was this, you know, the Tisch School of the Arts, you know, it was a club.
But it was the NYU club.
Yeah, exactly.
So of course you had to go through.
Right, right.
Function of the school.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Todd Hollebeck said, well, why don't we create a free, you know, a group that can do whatever it wants. And so he auditioned a bunch of people. And that bunch of people who he originally picked to be in the group ended up more or less being together for 8 years and on MTV.
Thomas Lennon, Kerry Kinney, Michael Showalter, Ken Marino, Patrick Jan, Michael Ian Black, of course, yeah, and Robert Ben Garrett, and Todd Hollebeck, and Joe Lowe, Trulio,
and David Wayne, if you, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, and David Wayne, yeah.
Yeah.
But why do you think that was so unusual that you came together when you were all at NYU?
Well, I think what was so unusual was that the group instantly had this amazing chemistry. Like, it was the first night that the group performed together, I attended the show. Mm-hmm. I wasn't in the group yet. But the audience was reacting as if they were at something that was a classic that they already knew.
Wow.
There was this weird energy in the room, and the people on stage seemed to also understand this is special. This is the beginning of something special. So I determined I'm going to get into that group.
Oh, wow, that's great.
So I literally, what I did was even before that show, I was stalking Joe Latrulio because I thought he was cute.
Okay.
I would have never gotten into the state if it wasn't for thinking Joe Latrulio was cute. Because what I did was, he was walking down the hallways of school, and then he went into a counselor's office to do a drop ad to get rid of one class and add another. I was like, oh my gosh, I can get in a class with that cute boy if I sit here in this chair and eavesdrop what class
is. Smart. That's smart.
So I did that.
Yeah.
And
it's like the beginning of a Lifetime movie.
Yeah,
it was a brilliant
camera
stroke.
Camera pans down the hallway past the lockers. Yeah. There's Kevin sitting in the chair outside of the principal's office, or outside of the counselor's office. Yeah, that's terrific. So. And you guys have inspired a lot of people. I think that the state inspired a lot of comedians. And when it ended up being a show on MTV, how many episodes? Only like 25 or
30, I think. Somewhere in the realm of 30 episodes we did for MTV, and then one Halloween special for CBS. And then they fired us right away. Les Moonves had just been hired. And so he was like, oh, I'm not ready to take on a new sketch comedy group. That wasn't in my plan. So he just fired us immediately.
Can you think of any other people that have come together like that, Hannes, at a university? I think of like R.E.M., the band. Like those guys all went together.
Or Talking Heads were at RISD.
I think Dave Matthews'
band. It's
some
like
of those
what
guys.
You were saying about the way it's just felt like to the audience, like they were watching. I think that that's the essence of when things go right.
Mm-hmm.
Music is like that. Like, you'll hear a song that becomes a giant hit.
Mm-hmm.
But the first time you hear it, you feel like you've heard it before.
Mm-hmm.
But not
yeah.
in the negative,
yeah.
like this is the same way. But it's like, oh, that's what makes a hit.
It's
a song that somehow you feel like you've heard it a million times.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's like you watch, you'll watch like a TV show, a brand new TV show. You're like, I feel like I've been watching this for 10 years.
Mm.
Yeah, it's familiar.
And it's familiar, but yet in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Goldbergs is like that. That's a terrific show.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like I've been watching this. Yeah, forever.
That's great.
And so you grew up Catholic, I expect.
I did very, actually. I have a couple of Catholic stories.
Was your high school a Catholic high school or just named after a saint?
No. It was a Jesuit school, which was fortunate because they were, you know, they're kind of like the liberal bastion.
Yeah, Jesuits are like, they're like the crazy Democrats.
Yeah. We're very fortunate to have a Jesuit Pope right
when you
now.
Were teenagers, did you go to confirmation and all that?
Oh yeah. And one of the things that's funny is I don't consider myself a Catholic still, but I still do believe in God. There's still so much of that that is such a big part of my psyche. And I'll tell stories about that, and people will write in to Risk outraged.
Yeah, they're don't like, you dare believe in God. You're my fantasy wild man. Yeah. Don't you have anything?
Back to the dildos. Yeah.
Exactly. You're only allowed to be one thing.
Do you remember your? Do you remember what you said in confirmation when you would go confess? Do you remember how it went down?
Oh my gosh, my confessions. Well, I do remember that when I was 10, I wanted to go to confession to say that I was gay to see if that would help to get it out of me. Thank God I didn't. Thank God I didn't.
I think you have to be like in 8th grade. You get confirmed at like 8th grade.
Yeah, 8th grade was confirmation, and I chose the name Luke because I thought Luke Skywalker was cute.
I chose the name Maria.
All right, I'm seeing a trend in all your decision making.
So funny. So it has to go like, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. My last confession was,
oh my
and for
God.
Me it was 6 weeks ago because I had to go to, you know, confession every 6 weeks because you could tell what a horrible person I am.
Gosh.
And it was, I lied, I swore, I disobeyed, and I would say, and I fighted with my brothers and sisters. That's what I would say every time because I didn't know. And then every time it was a different, you know, you say 5 Hail Marys and 10 Our Fathers. No, 20 Our Fathers and 7 Hail Marys.
You're Pittsburgh, right?
Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And then I'd see my brothers and sisters out in the church wandering around the pews and be like, what'd you get? I got 10 Hail Marys. You know? Oh, man, that's a long prayer. See you in the car. You know.
That's amazing.
And then my dad would take us to Burger King afterward and we'd get a Whopper.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be like,
there you go.
You know, sorry, you're going to be guilty for the rest of your life, but here's a Whopper.
Right.
Fix that right up. Burger King solved a lot of problems in my family growing up.
And it's probably causing a lot of problems in your family now.
For goodness sake, I just don't know. By the way, I just don't know. By the way,
I just want to say that this, by the way, is going to be, this entire episode is our Thanksgiving episode.
Okay.
So there's nothing more
perfect
for your family than to sit down around the hearth.
Gather
once
around.
You get like a poster of an old-fashioned radio from the 30s and you put it in front of your computer, and you all sit around
FDR
and listen to
FDR will be on next.
Speaking of you guys do radio-style episodes.
Yes.
Explain that. It's like a theater almost.
Yes, well, I love, when I finally created Risk, it was after 12 years of being of starving and having no idea what to do with my career. And when I happened upon this, I realized, oh my gosh, this is the perfect combination of things I love. I love telling stories, but I also love audio. I think that there's something really special about voices
personal,
just in your
you have
ear.
Your earbuds
yeah,
in, right? It's
yeah.
very, very personal.
So I thought, well, we should have a mix of stories told live in front of audiences. But, you know, there's a different kind of energy that comes out of a person telling a story, like I just did before,
right.
where it's just right in front of a microphone. I decided to start doing radio style stories too. Like Melina Williams, the slave episode is an hour long story by her, but it's got music and sound design
I think
in
that's
there.
Beautiful. Yeah, I love that. Tell me your top three podcasts that you like to listen to.
Oh, wow. You know, it's fascinating because I don't really listen to story. Well, no, I listen to some podcasts, but not the story ones because I'm constant.
I don't listen to I listen to Risk. I'll say that.
Oh, thank you.
Do you listen to like the Savage podcast?
I have listened to Savage before and love it. I've listened to WTF, Mark Maron's, and love that. I do like some of the fictional ones like Selected Shorts, the New Yorker Fiction Podcast.
Oh, Welcome to Night Vale.
Oh, now, Welcome to Night Vale. I listened to the first episode, and I thought, this isn't working for me, so I really feel like I have to listen to a couple more episodes.
It didn't work for me either, because I don't like to have to listen in order.
I have to admit that
I don't like...
Oh, okay,
like
so it is a series. Okay, yeah.
What that is. Is
Welcome
like
to Night Vale is a...
Soap opera?
It's
kind of like
music.
Lake Wobegon.
It has a lot of production quality
fake radio
to it.
Station.
Here's a good show. Dana Gould has a good show on.
Oh, does he?
Yeah,
Dana's been on Risk.
He does... He only does a show about every couple of months, but he produces it very well.
Mm-hmm.
So every segment has a little jingle at the end. It's very, very well crafted.
He's a very smart and sweet guy.
Yeah, he's been on a couple of times. He told a great story last one about he and his husband, they had pot cookies at...
No, that's Todd Glass.
I'm sorry, Dana?
I forgot. Dana likes vagina and Todd likes penis. That's how I keep them separate in my mind.
Todd Glass, have you had him on your show?
No, not yet. Not yet.
You got to. He would be fantastic on your show. Hey, it seems like New York, and then we got to play some Shotgun Storyworthy. It seems like New York is the hub of storytelling.
I think... I always like to compare it to folk music in the 60s.
Yeah.
Because it's a similar thing where I think folk music in the 60s, people are like, well, I can play a damn acoustic guitar. Let's give it a shot.
Let's do this.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And the truth is that many more people can tell really wonderful stories
right.
than can do, say, a stand-up set. Because if a person is taking a risk, we don't need them to be
funny.
A great performer.
And they don't need to be funny, right?
Yeah.
They just have to be interesting and truthful. And
exactly.
They are or they're not.
Yeah.
You can tell it immediately.
Yeah, for
I
sure.
I just saw a show last night, a podcast I was out watching live. And I know that the host of the show is sleeping with this girl, this actress that is on the show, okay?
Yeah.
But then he is interviewing her as if he's not, as if they're not sleeping together. And I'm thinking, this isn't working for me.
Right.
Because I know you're fucking her.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter that you're fucking her, but you're acting. So it was just so not truthful.
Yeah.
You could hear her doing her stage thing and him doing his stage thing. It didn't jive.
Even when I don't know people, but they come on and tell a story and I start to hear parts where I'm just like, that's not that in my guts. I feel like you're lying there. And that's just going to instantly kill it.
Told. We know that's true.
Nobody would say that if it wasn't.
Yeah, no. Not only you wouldn't say
That's so strange.
No, I'd be willing to say anything, but nobody would come up with the ball sneaker detail.
Right.
No,
nobody would be like, okay, and then the guy asked me to do something weird. What? My shoes. You're thinking my shoes are there. He wants me to spank myself with my shoes. Something. Nobody would be like, tie the shoes to your balls.
And then turn it like a propeller around your cock
balls. Like, no.
I swear to God, that image is in my head forever.
Were you moving? You're not spinning it. But you weren't. You were just standing there.
Right. I was just standing there, but I was spinning
twisting
it in order to wrap it around.
Right.
Yeah.
But so, yeah. And that, again, is like, what happened to this guy that's what he came up with? that's the shoe thing.
And then Kevin Allison asks him into his home.
Oh. Yeah, that's the part where you're so from Ohio. You're like,
well, this is
what could possibly go
and remember
wrong?
Remember Jeffrey Dahmer? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Was that in Ohio
that actually
as well?
Was the, what you had
no,
is the,
that what
was
wasn't in Ohio.
That was,
wasn't?
Are you kidding?
What?
Jeffrey Dahmer is from Milwaukee. Don't you dare.
That's what you have going for you? That's the pride of your city?
We had guys. What I love about that story, it's a horrible story, is the guy, there was a Vietnamese kid, goes to this guy's house, right? He realizes this guy's going to kill me. He's naked. He runs out into the street.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He finds a couple of Milwaukee police officers.
Yeah.
He doesn't speak English.
Uh-huh. Jeffrey Dahmer comes up.
Jeffrey
and
Dahmer
says,
comes out and goes,
"Sorry about
we're
this
gay
mess
and
up.
We're thing and we're and the cops probably thinking they're being all liberal, like I'm not going to take this kid
question this.
Down
oh.
because he's
they
gay.
Send him home.
I'll like
oh.
let
Jeffrey
him
Dahmer.
Go back in. Jeffrey oh. Dahmer take this kid back in and he fucking murders him.
Oh my!
And it must it had to be like they're like. Hey, you know, I'm not like my dad would have like beat these fags up. Excuse my language.
Yeah,
you know, it's like it'd be like. Hey, I'm liberal. You guys do what you want to do. And you fucking set the kid in to get murdered.
Well, that's your fine police department, Hannes.
I'm just saying.
Listen, there's a series
they went and they had a cruller.
There's a series on Netflix called Crimes of the Century. It's my new favorite show, but I've already been through all of them.
You love true crime.
I love true
crime. Is it like documentary?
And so they have one on Jeffrey Dahmer, and they reenact that story, and it's so fucking horrible.
No,
man.
It's so disturbing.
It's so sad.
Because, it's terrible.
Seriously, what I thought was, first, like, well, they're just going to arrest him for being gay. And I'm like, oh, my God, it would have been better if you had been a homophobic policeman and arrested them. Everyone would have been better off if you had been giant homophobes.
Yeah.
That's what's so freakish about that particular story to me.
Yeah.
If you had been a typical Midwestern cop, we all would have been
naked.
Better off.
I mean, he had no clothes on.
No, yeah, he's naked. He's bleeding, I believe,
traumatized
from the anus.
Horrible.
And he's just like, things went wrong. They were like,
I guess that's my only point, Kevin, is I feel the danger. There's a danger
you're
aspect.
Lucky.
Am I right?
No, there's no doubt that there is that sort of risk involved. And one does have to really, like, and, you know, also we make so many stupid mistakes in our 20s. Mm-hmm. I think I was more prone to be doing stupid stuff in my 20s.
Yeah, I dread that when my daughter grows up, that if she does even, like, 10% of the stuff I did.
Yeah,
yeah but she's not, because your mother never talked to you about sex, and you grew up in a Catholic family, and you were being ignored because you were the youngest daughter.
Why don't you just sum it all up here in 30 seconds?
What I'm saying is, you're going to give your daughter so much sex information, she probably won't have sex till she's 28.
Yeah, I already give her a lot of information.
She'll be like with it, making out with a kid in high school, and all she'll hear is your voice going, "Now remember, wrap it before you tap it."
Wrap it before you tap it. What? Honest, you're crazy, man.
No,
I already tell her.
You're already talking about. Always. She's already bored with you saying the word vagina to her, and she's seven.
Yeah,
she's like, vagina.
I just switched to vajayjay.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, listen, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Sure. Okay, here we go.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
The topic is vacation. Oh, okay. I went to San Francisco for the first time when I was, I think, 26 or 25. And my big goal was just to have LSD, basically, because I hadn't done that with my friend in a while. But when I got there, I realized that I had the wrong phone number for my friend. So I realized, oh, my gosh, I'm just going to have to walk around San Francisco. I'm going to have to Kerouac it. So I threw my bag in some bushes, and I go into a gay bar there, and Lord, I run into a guy from high school, and he says, Kevin, what are you doing here? And I said, oh, my gosh, I'm so happy to run into you because I'm homeless. I can't reach my friend. And he said, oh, that's too bad. And then he went on talking. Then at a certain point, he said, wait, are you stoned? And I said, yeah, I have some marijuana in my bag, which is hidden in someone's bushes a few blocks away. He's like, oh, you can stay with me. And that was the beginning of a weekend of craziness. And we did eventually find some LSD.
All right. Yeah. That 102, you are good on time, man.
Now, wait a minute. How did you not get to San Francisco until you're 26?
Yeah. Oh, you
know. It seems like
such a, great
a long time. Well, you went to New York, I guess.
I travel so much now, but throughout most of my 20s, I did not. Yeah.
Well, it's such a great city. Oh, God, I love it.
I was
thinking that there's nowhere better to do.
Every bush is filled with marijuana.
Yeah, exactly. Now, do you guys know Dixie De La Tour, who does Body?
Yes, she's a friend of Bill Ratner's, who's our announcer.
Oh, and I have a friend who used to work at Universal, who is now a burlesque dancer with her. Oh. And her her stage name is Botox.
Dixie De La Tour. Have you gone up to San Francisco recently?
Yes, did a dual Body slash Risk show.
Oh, that's terrific.
It's going to be on an episode soon.
A Risk and Body storytelling is all the sex and all the same deviance and all that. It is all in a playful, educated, smart, adult consensual.
Yeah, we had a straight guy who tried to tell it, who was not in the kink community, tried to tell a scene about that had a little bit of a predatory feel about it,
yikes.
And the audience was just like,
we're not
up for this. American got to get it
so seriously.
Yeah,
it's the ultimate pleasure and the ultimate ridiculousness.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. Mm. Imagine what you look like having sex.
Oh, yeah.
Ridiculous.
All of it is pretty strange. Yeah.
It is.
I mean...
There's nobody 69ing where you're like, oh, yeah, okay now. That's... Yeah. It's all like,
yeah,
boy, I don't know.
Yeah, this is like, I'm trying to concentrate, and yet it's not really...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like Raymond Chandler, my favorite author, once wrote that... making sex glamorous is $1 billion industry, and it costs every penny.
True. Wait, it's worth every penny, or
it costs every penny. Making sex glamorous is $1 billion industry, and it costs every penny.
It's
like doing it is great, but watching people do it, it's like if you just really saw sex tapes, that were just amateur sex tapes.
There's a whole side of porn like that, though.
Yeah, I know, but it's like I think that thrill comes from seeing things you're not supposed to see. The actual deed looks ridiculous.
And I think
Shakespeare, 500 years ago, wrote, it's the beast with two backs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's, oh, wow.
That's where that phrase comes from. Shakespeare wrote that. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, it's really silly.
And I think that people get the wrong impression from professional porn as to how to do things, you know, because they're in poses that are supposed to be cinematic, not necessarily functional.
Yeah, that isn't, yeah, exactly.
Interesting. By the way, I think you did a good thing with that guy. When you threw Ham out, it's a good idea to always just toss out their belongings because they'll follow.
Yeah.
I've heard that with if somebody's attacking you, or you're a woman or a man, you're down the street, they always say, take your wallet, take your purse, throw it away from you, because they're going to go to that. That's what they want. They want the wallet or the purse to just get it off of your body.
Yeah.
There you go. You take that with you, Kevin.
I was an actor in a reenactment once in a show. It was called What Should You Do or something like that.
Yeah.
All right.
If, for instance. Okay. And it was like, guy pulls a gun on you. He's trying to steal. Yeah. First, throw your purse away and then run away. But you're like, well, he has a gun. The odds of him being a marksman that can hit a moving target with a pistol.
Yeah.
Is almost impossible.
And really? A deadly shot is even more difficult.
Yeah, in the movies, it's like, oh, a guy, he's 50 yards away and he's running, he's shooting, the guy drops dead.
Yeah.
That guy's not going to, almost impossible that he can hit you if you're running away, especially if you're dodging.
Do they say you should run a little bit zigzaggy?
I believe that was in the in-laws.
In-laws
with Peter Falk. And you got to go, it wasn't zigzag. It was, what was the word he used?
The zipper? Was it the zipper?
Yeah, what?
Serpentine.
That was the Peter Falk says to Alan Arkin. It's like, you got to run serpentine. What? And he's just running back and forth. He's like, no, you're just running back and forth. Run serpentine. There's guns going off the whole time.
Listen, Kevin Allison, I thank you so much for coming today. I know you flew in from New York today. You come right from LAX, mm-hmm. and you're already telling a story. And I bet you have a very busy weekend planned.
I'm going to
be at the LA Podfest.
That's right. Very, very excited. Good luck on that. And listen, thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. This was a pleasure.
And I really want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Heather Clooney. It's not Clooney, it's Cooney.
She wishes.
And I want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Sean Merrick and Heather Cooney and Maria Bertolozzi.
I would like to say thanks to Maria for actually being a young person who can pull a 1978 movie reference.
Yeah, that was
that
cool.
That I missed.
Yeah, she's good. Way to go,
the
Maria.
The serpentine reference.
Oh, there you go.
It's not from the remake of The In-Laws.
No.
This is the original.
Yeah.
And on behalf of John Thomas Griffith, you know, he's the guy that wrote the theme song, Follow Me, Hannes.
Listen, I met him in a sex maze once. That's all I'm saying.
And on behalf
that's
of our storyteller tonight.
That's where he wrote the song, Follow Me. He had a feather sticking out of his ass, and he's singing, Follow Me. Follow
and on
me
behalf
sex maze.
Of our storyteller tonight, Kevin
Welcome
Allison, thank
to
you again.
Jungle.
Thank you,
and
guys.
And of course, you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy week.
That you can.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.